Now you're going to Geleth, bound on a path to strengthen your father's hand.
I am. The brothers' horses snorted around me.
If any had a mind that you might truly succeed, they would stop you, Sages said. The one who has played you these past years will seek to tighten the bonds you have loosened. Perhaps the priest will help you. His presence did before. He has value as a talisman. But past that, he is empty robes.
A horse pushed against Jared, the rider moving beside me. I set my hand on my sword hilt. I don't like you, pagan.
What do you think scared the marsh dead, Jorg?
No ripple in his calm watchfulness. I... The boast sounded hollow before I spoke it.
An angry boy? Sages shook his head. The dead saw a darker hand upon your heart.
I...
Accept my protection. There are grander dreams you can dream.
I felt the soft weight of sleep upon me, the saddle unsure beneath me.
Dream witch, a dark voice spoke at my shoulder. Dream witch.
The Nuban held out his crossbow. Black fist curled around the stock, muscle strained against the load.
I carry your token, dream witch. Your magics will not stain the boy.
Sages shrank back, the tattooed writing seeming to writhe across his face. In an instant, my eyes were wide.
You're him.
The clarity of it was blinding. You set my brothers in father's dungeon. You sent your hunter to kill me. I set a hand upon the Nuban's bow, remembering how he took it from the man I killed in a barn one stormy night. The Dream Witch's hunter.
You sent your hunter to kill me.
The last tatters of Sages's charm left me. And now it's my hunter who holds it. Sages turned and made for the castle gate, half running.
Pray I don't find you here on my return, pagan.
I said it quietly. If he heard it, he might follow my advice. We left then, riding from the city without a backward look. The rains first found us on the Ankrath Plains and dogged our passage north into the mountainous borders of Geleth. I've been soaked on the road many a time, but the rains as we left my father's lands were a cold misery that reached deeper than our bones. Burlo's appetite remained undampened, though, and Reich's temper too. Burlo ate as if the rations were a challenge, and Reich growled at every raindrop. At my instruction, Gomps took confession from the men. After hearing Red Kent speak of his crimes and learning how he earned his name, Gomps asked to be excused his duties. After listening to Lyre's whispers, he begged. Days passed, long days and cold nights. I dreamed of Catherine, of her face and the fierceness of her eyes. Of an evening, we ate Gaines's mystery stews and Fat Burlo tended the beasts, checking hooves and fetlocks. Burlo always looked to the horses. Perhaps he felt guilty about weighing so heavy on them, but I put it down to a morbid fear of walking. We wound further up into the bleakness of the mountains, and at last the rains broke. We camped in a high pass, and I sat with the Nuban to watch the sun fall. He held his bow, whispering old secrets to it in his home tongue. For 2 days we walked the horses across slopes too steep and sharp with rock for any hooves, save the mountain goats. A pillar marked the entrance to the gorge of the Lucrota. It stood 2 yards wide and twice as tall, a stump shattered by some giant's whim. The remnants of the upper portion lay all around. Runes marked it, Latin, I think. Though so worn, I could read almost nothing. We rested at the pillar. I clambered up it to address the brothers from the top and take in the lie of the land. I set the men to making camp. Gaines set his fire and clanked his pots. The wind blew slight in the gorge, oilcloth tents barely flapping before it. The rain came again, but in a patter, soft and cold. Not enough to stir Reich, lying on the rock some 5 yards from the pillar. his snoring like a saw through wood. I stood looking up at the cliff faces. There were caves up there. Many caves. My hair swung behind me as I scanned the cliff. I'd let the Nuban weave it into a dozen long braids, a bronze charm at the end of each. He said it would ward off evil spirits. That just left me the good ones to worry about. I stood with my hands on the Ankrath sword, resting its point before me, waiting for something. The men grew nervous, the animals too. I could tell it from their lack of complaint. They watched the slopes with me, toothless Elban, as weather-beaten as the rocks. Young Rodat pale and pockmarked, Red Kent with his secrets, Sly Roe, Liar, Fat Burlow, and the rest of my ragged bunch. The Nuban kept close by the pillar, with Makin at his side. My band of brothers. All of them worried, and not knowing why. Gomst looked set to run if he had a notion where to go. The brothers had a sense for trouble. I knew that well enough to understand that when they all worry together, it's a bad thing coming. A very bad thing. Transcript from the trial of Sir Makin of Trent. Cardinal Hellot, Papal Prosecution. And do you deny raising the Cathedral of Wexton? Sir Makin. I do not. Cardinal Hellot. Or the sack of Lower Mercer? Sir Makin. No, nor do I deny the sack of Upper Mercer. Cardinal Hellot. Let the record show the accused finds amusement in the facts of his crime. Court Recorder. So noted. Chapter 27. The monsters came when the light failed. Shadows swallowed the gorge, and the silence thickened until the wind could barely stir it. Makin's hand fell on my shoulder. I flinched, edging the fear with momentary hatred for my own weakness and for Makin for showing it to me. Up there, he nodded to my left. One of the cave mouths had lit from within, a single eye watching us through the falling night. That's no fire, I said. The light had nothing of warmth or flicker. As we watched, the source of illumination moved, swinging harsh shadows out across the slopes. A lantern! Fat Burlow stepped up beside me, puffing out his cheeks in consternation. The brothers gathered around us. The strange lantern emerged onto the slope, and darkness erased the cave behind. It shone like a star, a cold light, reaching from the source in a thousand bright lines. A single figure cut a wedge of shadow into the illumination. The lantern bearer. We watched the unhurried descent. The wind sought my flesh with icy fingers and tugged for attention at my cloak.
Ave Maria, gratia plena Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus.
Somewhere in the night, old Gomsty muttered his Ave Marias. A slow horror eased itself among us. Mother of God! Makin spat the oath out, as if to rid himself of the fear. We all felt it, crawling over the unseen rocks. The brothers might have run, but where was there to go? Torches, damn you, now! I broke the paralysis, shocked that I'd stood hypnotized by the approach for so long. Now! I drew my sword. They moved at that, scurrying to the embers of the fire, stumbling over the rough ground. Nuban, Roe, Burlow, see there's nothing coming up along the river. Even as I said it, I knew we'd been flanked. There. There. Behind that rise. The Nuban motioned with his crossbow. He'd seen something. The Nuban wasn't one to spook at nothing. We'd watched the pretty light, and they'd flanked us. Simple as a market play of kiss and dip. Distract your mark with a pretty face, and come up from behind to rob him blind. The torches flared. Men ran to their weapons. The light drew closer, and we saw it for what it was. A child, whose very skin bled radiance. She walked an even pace, every inch aglow, white like molten silver, making mere shadows of the rags she wore.
Ave Maria, gratia plena.
Father Gomp's voice rose, lifting the prayer like a shield.
Hail Mary, I echoed him, full of grace indeed.
The girl's eyes burned silver, and the ghosts of flames chased across her skin. There was a fragile beauty to her that took my breath. A monster walked behind her. In any other circumstance, it would have been him that drew the eye. The monster had been built in parody of a man, sharing Adam's lines as a cow apes a horse. The light revealed the horror of his flesh, sparing no detail. The thing might have topped 7 foot in height. It even had a few inches on little Reiki. Liar raised his bow, disgust on his pinched face. I took his arm as he sighted on the monster. No! I wanted to hear them speak. Besides, it looked as if an arrow would just annoy our new friend. Under a twisted red hide, the monster's chest looked like a 100-gallon barrel. A set of ribs pierced the flesh, reaching for each other above his heart. The girl's light touched us with a cold kiss, and I felt her in my mind. She spoke, and her voice seemed to rise from the rocks. I heard her footsteps in the corridors of my memory. There are places where children shouldn't wander. I met the girl's silver gaze, and for a moment, shadows licked across her.
Welcome to our camp, I said. I stepped forward to greet them, leaving the brothers and entering the brilliance of the child's aura.
The monster smiled at me, a wide smile showing teeth stolen from the wolf. He'd the eyes of a cat, slitted against the light and throwing it back. I passed Beauty by and stood before the beast. We had us a moment of judging. I ran an eye over the muscle heaped on his bones, crossed over with pulsing veins and hard ridges of scar tissue. I could have eaten dinner off one of his hands. He had 3 fingers and a thumb on each, thick as the girl's arm. He could have taken my head in one hand and crushed it. I snapped my neck forward, sudden-like, and jumped at him with a shout, thrusting my face at his. He flinched backward and stumbled on the loose rock. The laughter escaped me. I couldn't stop it.
Why?
The girl looked puzzled. She tilted her head, and the shadows ran.
Because?
I gasped for my breath as the monster righted himself.
Why?
For a moment, I didn't know.
Because fuck him! Because he's such a big bastard!
I pushed the grin from my face. Because he had given me pause. Because he had made me feel small. I looked down at her.
I'm bigger than you.
Are you going to let that scare you?
I do fear you, the girl said. Not for your size, Jorg. For the threads that gather around you. For the lines that meet where I can't see them. For the weight and the knife edge on which it sits.
She spoke in a sing-song, high and sweet.
You make a fine oracle, girl, I said. You've got that mix of profound and empty just right.
I slammed my sword back into its sheath.
So you've my name. Shall we share?
Do the Lucrota have names?
Jane, she said. And this is Gorgoth, a leader under the mountain.
Charmed, I gave them a little bow. Perhaps your friends could come out from behind the rocks, and that way my brothers won't feel so tempted to shoot at shadows. Gorgoth set his cat's eyes on me, a narrow and feral stare.
Up!
His voice rolled out even deeper than I'd imagined, and I'd imagined it pretty deep. Other monsters rose around our camp, some of them shockingly close. Had every gargoyle and grotesque torn free from the great cathedrals and gathered to form an army, the Lucrota would be that army made flesh. No two stood alike. All had been sketched on the frame of a man, but with a poor hand. None were as huge and hale as Gorgoth. Most leaked from sores, sported withered limbs, or laboured beneath growths of wart and tumour heaped in foul confusion.
Jeez, you Gorgoth! Your friends make little Reiki look almost handsome, I said.
Makin came to join me, eyes screwed up against Jane's light. He shaded his face with a hand and looked Gorgoth up and down. "And this will be Sir Makin," I said, "Knight of the Court of King Olidan, terror of..."
"A man to trust,"
Jane's high voice cut across me,
"if he gives you his word."
She turned those silver orbs of hers on me, and I felt my yesterdays crowding at my shoulder.
"You want to go to the heart of the mountain?"
she said. "Yes, I couldn't deny that."
"You bring death, Prince of Ankrath," she said.
Gorgoth growled at that. It sounded like rocks grinding together. The child put a glowing hand to his wrist.
"Death, if we agree. Death, if we resist."
She kept her eyes on me.
"What have you to offer for passage?"
I had to admit, she was good at her game. It wouldn't go well for them if my plan worked. And it wouldn't go well for them if they tried to stop us. "I did bring a gift," I said. "But if it proves not to your liking, then I can make you some promises. I'll have Sir Makin promise you too, and he's a man of his word." I smiled down at her. "When I saw this place on a map..." I paused and remembered the circumstances with a certain fondness.
"Sally,"
the girl whispered, remembering the tavern with me. That shocked me for a moment. I didn't like the idea of this little girl in my head, opening doors, making childish judgment, shining her light in places that should be dark. Part of me wanted to cut her down, a large part of me. I unclenched my jaw. "When I saw this gorge on my map, I thought to myself, what a godforsaken spot. And that's when it occurred to me, what to bring for barter. I brought you God." I turned and pointed to Father Gomst. "I've brought you salvation, the blessing of communion. I've brought you benediction, catechism, confession if you must. All the saving your ugly little souls can handle." Gomst let out a girlish scream and started to run. The Nuban caught a dark arm around his waist and hauled him up over one shoulder. I expected Jane to answer, but Gorgoth made the deal.
"We will take the priest."
Something about his voice made my chest hurt.
"We will guide you to the great stair. The necromancers will find you, though. You will not return."
Some said that Red Kent had a black heart. And that might be true. But anyone who had seen him take out a 6-strong foot patrol with hatchet and knife would tell you the man had an artist's soul. Chapter 28. Necromancers! I trudged behind Jane with Gorgoth at my back. There had been nothing about necromancers in my books.
"They command the dead. Mages."
"I know what they are," I cut across Gorgoth. "What are they doing in my way?"
"Mount Honus attracts them," Jane said. "There's death at the heart of the mountain. Old magics. It makes their work easier."
Even the Lucrota's caves looked ugly. When I was 7 and William 5, Tutor Lundist took us secretly to the caverns of Padarak. Unknown to any at court, the heirs of Ankrath slid and slipped into the blind depths and came to a cathedral hall of such pillared wonder that it beggared the grace of God. I carry the glory of that place with me still. The chambers of the Lucrota had none of that fluid elegance, no touch of the hidden artistry that lies in the deep places of the world. We walked through corridors of builder stone, poured and shaped using arts long forgotten. Jane's light showed us ancient vaults, cracked in places and scaled with lime. We wove a path around fallen blocks, larger than cart horses, heading deeper all the time, like worms burrowing to the core, seeking the roots of the mountain.
"Shut your moaning, priest!"
Ro came up behind the Nuban and showed old Gomst his knife, a wicked piece of ironwork to be sure. Father Gomst let up his wailing at that, and I did miss it, for the echoes had been quite haunting. I fell back for a word. That, and to make sure Ro didn't decide to carve up our gift to the monsters before we'd handed it over proper-like. "Peace now, Father," I said. I pushed Ro's blade aside. He scowled at that, did Ro, all pockmarks and squinting eyes.
"You'll just be changing flocks, Father," I told Gomsty. "Your new congregation might look a little fouler, but on the inside, well, I'm sure they'll be fairer than Ro here."
The Nuban grunted and shifted Father Gomp's weight on his shoulder. "Set him down," I said. "He can walk. We're good and lost now. There'll be no running." The Nuban set old Gomsty on his feet. He looked at me, his face too black to read.
"It's wrong, Jorg. Trade in gold, not people. He's a holy man. He speaks for the White Christ."
Gomst looked at the Nuban with a hatred I'd never seen in him before, as if he'd just grown horns and called on Lucifer.
"Well, now he can speak to Gorgoth for Christ," I said.
The Nuban said nothing, his face a blank. Something about the Nuban's silences always made me want to say a little more, as if I had to make it right with him. Makin scraped at me the same way, but not so bad.
"It's not like he can't leave," I said. "He's free to walk home if he really must. He'll just have to earn himself some food for the journey and a map is all."
The Nuban gave me the white crescent of his smile. I walked on, a cold voice inside me whispering of weakness, of the thin edge of a wedge, of a sharp knife cutting without tears, of a hot iron to cauterize a wound before infection spread. It doesn't do to love a brother. Jane's light dimmed and flickered as I drew near. She recoiled slightly with an intake of breath. I curled my lip and imagined her falling from a cliff. It worked better than I'd hoped. She gave a squeal and covered her eyes. Gorgoth stepped between us.
"Keep away from her, Dark Prince."
So I walked in the shadows, and they led us on into the mountain. We followed wide tunnels that stretched for miles, level floored with curved ceilings. Rust stains ran the length of the passages in parallel lines, though to what end men would lay iron in such a manner, I can't say. Unless these were the pipes through which the secret fire of the builders ran. We left Jane and all but two of her kindred at the shores of a lake so wide, even her silver light could not reach across the waters. The builders had made this place too. Stone gave way to water with a single sharp step. The ceiling stretched flat and without adornment. Jane's folk moved away toward shelters of wood, and skins huddled at the water's edge. Gorgoth led them, one hand enveloping Father Gomt's shoulders. Jane paused, her gaze moving between the two grotesques who remained to guard us. She said nothing, but I could feel the undercurrent of unvoiced speech as she instructed them.
"No final words for me, little one?"
I asked. I went on one knee before her. A fierce humour gripped me.
"No predictions? No pearls to throw before this swine? Come, share a glimpse with me. Blind me with the future."
She met my gaze, and the light dazzled. But I wouldn't look away.
"Your choices are keys to doors I cannot see beyond."
I felt anger rise in me and pushed it down with a snarl.
"There's more than that."
"You have a dark hand on your shoulder, a hole in your mind, a hole in your memories, a hole pulling me in, pulling."
I seized her hand. That was a mistake, for it burned the skin and froze the bone in equal measure. I'd have set it down if I could, but the strength left me. For a moment, I could see only the child's eyes.
"When you meet her, run, just run, nothing else."
It felt as though I was speaking the words, though I could hear Jane's voice frame them. Then I fell. I woke to the light of torches.
"He's up!"
I found myself face to face with Ryke.
"Jeez, you Ryke! You been gargling rat piss again?"
I pushed his brutal jaw to one side and used his shoulder to lever myself up. The brothers began to rise around me, hefting their packs. Makin came from the water's edge, Gorgoth looming behind him.
Don't go touching the prophetess of the Lucrota.
He used a mock scold. I could see the relief hidden in his eyes. I'll bear it in mind, I said. Gorgoth paused to scowl at me, then led the way, holding a pitch torch the size of a small tree. Our path angled up now, the tunnel thick with dust that tasted of bitter almonds. We walked for less than 1,000 yards before the way broadened into a wide gallery crossed by stone trenches of obscure purpose, yards across and as deep as a man is tall. At the mouth of the gallery, a wooden pen hugged the wall. The stays bound with rope. Two children huddled together in the middle of the bare cage. Two Lucrota. Gorgoth hauled the door open.
Out!
They were neither of them past 7 summers. If summers were a proper count for the dark halls of the Lucrota. They came out naked, two skinny boys. Brothers to look at them. The younger one perhaps 5. Of all the Lucrota I'd seen, they looked the least monstrous. A black and red stippling marked their skin, colouring them like the tigers of Indus. Dark barbs of horn jutted from their elbows, mirrored in the talons on their fingers. The elder of the two shot me a glance, his eyes utterly black, no white, iris, or pupil.
We don't want your children, Makin said.
He reached into his pocket and tossed a twist of dry meat to the brothers.
Put them back.
The meat twist skittered to a halt at the elder child's feet. He kept his eyes on Gorgoth. The littlest watched the dry meat intently, but made no move. Their skin stretched so tight over the bone, I could count every rib.
These are for the necromancers. Don't waste your food on them.
Gorgoth's rumble came so low, it hurt to hear it.
A sacrifice? The Nuban asked.
They're dead already, Gorgoth said. The strength of the Lucrota isn't in them.
They look hearty enough to me, I said, with a meal or two in them. Sure you're not just jealous because they're not as ugly as the rest of you.
I didn't much care what Gorgoth did with the runts, but I took a pleasure in taunting him. Gorgoth flexed his hands and 6 giant knuckles popped like logs on the fire.
Eat!
The two boys fell on Makin's food, snarling like dogs.
The Lucrota are pure-born. We gain our gifts as we grow. It is a slow change.
He gestured to the boys, licking the last fragments of dry meat from the stone.
These two have the changes of a Lucrota twice their age. The gifts will come faster now, faster and stronger. None can bear such changes. I have seen it before. Such gifts will turn a man inside out.
Something in those cat's eyes of his told me he meant it, told me he'd seen it.
Better they serve us as payment to keep the necromancers from our caves. Better the dead ones take these than search for victims who could have lived. They will find a quick death and a long peace.
If you say it, then it is so, I shrugged.
Let's be moving on. I'm keen to meet these necromancers of yours. We followed Gorgoth through the gallery. The brothers scampered around us, and I saw the Nuban slip them dried apricots from the woolen depths of his tunic.
So what's your plan?
Makin sidled close to me, voice low.
Hmm?
I watched the younger child skip away from Lyre's well-aimed boot.
These necromancers, what's your plan?
Makin kept to a hiss. I didn't have a plan. But that was just one more obstacle to overcome. There was a time when the dead stayed dead, I said. I've read it in Father's library. For the longest time, the dead only walked in stories. Even Plato had the dead comfortably far away, over the River Styx.
That's what you get for all that reading, Makin said. I remember the Marsh Road. Those ghosts hadn't read your books.
Nuban, I called him over. Nuban, come tell Sir Makin why the dead don't rest easy anymore. He joined us, crossbow over one shoulder, oil of cloves in the air around him.
The wise men of Nuba tell it that the door stands ajar.
He paused and ran a very pink tongue over very white teeth.
There's a door to death, a veil between the worlds. and we push through when we die. But on the day of 1,000 suns, so many people had to push through at once, they broke the door. The veils are thin now. It just takes a whisper and the right promise, and you can call the dead back.
There you have it, Makin, I said. Makin furrowed his brow at that, then rubbed his lips.
And the plan? Ah, I said.
The plan? He could be annoyingly persistent, could Makin. Same as normal.
We just keep killing them until they stay down.
Brother Roe, you could trust to make a long shot with a short bow. You could trust him to come out of a knife fight with somebody else's blood on his shirt. You could trust him to lie, to cheat, to steal, and to watch your back. You couldn't trust his eyes, though. He had kind eyes, and you couldn't trust them.
Chapter 29. The builders had an aversion to stairs, it seems. Gorgoth led us up through the mountain by treacherous paths cut into the walls of endless vertical shafts. Perhaps the builders grew wings. Or like the farseers of Indus, they could levitate through force of will. In any case, the picks of later men had chewed a stair into the poured stone of the shaft walls, narrow and crudely hewn. We climbed with care, our arms tight before us, keeping narrow for fear of pitching ourselves into a fall with an inadvertent shrug of the shoulders. If the depths had been lit, I don't doubt but some of the brothers would have needed the point of a sword to help them up. But darkness hides all sins, and we could fool ourselves the floor lay unseen 20 feet below. Strange how the deeper a hole, the stronger it draws a man. The fascination that lives on the keenest edge and sparkles on the sharpest point also gathers in depths of a fall. I felt the pull of it every moment of that climb. Gorgoth seemed least well-crafted for such an ascent, but he made it look easy. The 2 Lucrota children danced in front of me, skipping up the steps with a disregard that made me want to shove them into space.
"Why don't they run off?"
I called ahead to Gorgoth. He didn't answer. I guess the boys' disdain for the fall had to be set against the fate that awaited them if they made it safely to the top.
"You're taking them to die. Why do they follow you?"
I called the words at the broad expanse of his back.
"Ask them."
Gorgoth's voice rumbled like distant thunder in the shaft. I caught the elder brother by the neck and held him out over the fall. There was almost no weight to him, and I needed a rest. I could feel the tally of all those steps fueling a fire in my leg muscles.
"What's your name, little monster?"
I asked him. He looked at me with eyes that seemed darker and wider than the drop to my right.
"Name? No name,"
he said, high and sweet.
"That's no good. I'll give you a name," I said. "I'm a prince. I'm allowed to do things like that. You'll be Gog, and your brother can be Magog."
I glanced around at Red Kent, who stood behind me, puffing, not the slightest flicker of comprehension on his peasant face.
"Gog, Magog."
"Jeez you, where's a priest when I need someone to get a biblical joke?"
I said. "I never thought to miss Father Gomst." I turned back to young Gog.
"What are you so happy about?"
"Old Gorgy Goth up there. He's taking you to be eaten by the dead."
"Can fight him,"
Gog said, quiet-like.
"Law says so."
If he felt uncomfortable being held up by the neck, he didn't show it.
"What about little Magog?"
I nodded to his brother, squatting on the step above us.
"Are you going to fight too?"
I grinned at the notion of these two doing battle with death mages.
"I'll protect him,"
Gog said, and he started to twist in my hand, so hard and fast that I had to set him down, or else pitch over the edge with him. He scampered to his brother's side and set striped hand to striped shoulder.
They watched me with those black eyes, quieter than mice.
Maybe some sport in this, Kent said behind me. I bet the littlest one lasts longest,
Reich shouted, and he bellowed with laughter, as if he'd said something funny. He almost slipped off then, and that shut up his laughing quick enough. You want to win this game, Gog? You leave little Magog to look after himself. As I spoke the words, a chill set the hair standing on my neck. Show me you've the strength to look after yourself, and maybe I'll find something those necromancers want more than they want your scrawny soul. Gorgoth started up again, and the brothers followed without a word. I walked on, rubbing the scars of my forearms where the hook briar had started to itch at me again. I counted 1,000 steps, and I only started out of boredom, so I missed the first 10 minutes of the climb. My legs turned to jelly, my armor felt as though it were made from inch-thick lead, and my feet got too clumsy to find the stairs. Brother Gaines convinced Gorgoth to call a rest hold by stumbling into space, and wailing for a good 10 seconds before the unseen floor convinced him to shut up. All these stairs, so we can reach the great stair? I spat a mess of phlegm after dear departed Brother Gaines. Makin flashed me a grin and wiped the sweaty curls from his eyes. Maybe the necromancers will carry us up.
Gonna need a new cook, Red Kent spat after Gaines. Can't anyone be worse than Gainesy?
Fat Burlow moved only his lips. The rest of him slumped lifeless, hugging the wall. I thought it rather poor eulogy for Gaines, since Barlow seemed to put away more of the man's culinary efforts than the rest of us put together.
Reich would be worse, I said. I see him tackling an evening meal the way he approaches burning a village.
Gaines was all right. He'd carved me a bone flute once, when I first came to the brothers. On the road, we'd talk away our dead with a curse and a joke. If we'd not liked Gaines, nobody would have made comment. I felt a little stupid for letting Gorgoth walk us so hard. I took the bitter taste of that and set an edge on it, to save for the necromancers if they wanted to test our mettle. We found the top of the stair without losing any more brothers. Gorgoth took us through a series of many pillared halls, echoingly empty, the ceiling so low that Reich could reach up to touch them. Wide curving ramps stepped us up from one hall to the next, each the same as the one before, dusty and empty. The smell crept up around us, so slowly that there wasn't a point where I could say I noticed it. The stink of death comes in many flavors, but I like to think I recognize the Reaper in all his guises. The dust became thicker as we made our way an inch deep in places. Here and there, the occasional bone lay half covered. Then more bones, then a skull, then three. Where the builder stone cracked and the waters oozed, the dust became a grey mud and flowed in miniature deltas. I pulled a skull from one such swamp. It came free with a satisfying squelch, and mud poured from its sockets like syrup. So where are these necromancers of yours, Gorgoth? I asked.
We make for the great stair. They will find us, he said.
They've found you.
She slid around the pillar closest to me, a woman from the night of my imagination. She moved her body over the rough stone as if it were sheer as silk. Her voice fell on the ear like velvet, dark and rich. Not one sword left its scabbard. The Nuban lifted his crossbow and heaved the loading lever back, bunching the heavy muscle in his arm into a black ball. The necromancer ignored him. She let the pillar go with a lover's reluctance and turned to face me. I heard Makin suck in his breath at my side. The woman mixed supple strength with a succulence that young princes doodle into the margins of their studies. She wore only paints and ribbons, the patterns swirled across her in Celtic knots of grey on black. When you meet her, run.
Well met, my lady.
I sketched her a court bow. Just run.
Gorgoth, you bring us guests as well as tribute.
Her laughter set a tingling in my groin. Nothing else, just run. She offered her hand. For a moment, I hesitated.
And you would be?
Her eyes, that had held only the reflection of fire, now stole the green I remembered from a distant throne room. Prince Onrus Jorg Ancrath. I took her hand, cool and heavy, and kissed it. At your service. And I was.
Chella.
A dark fire ran in my veins. She smiled, and I felt the same smile cross my face. She stepped closer. My skin sang with the thrill of her. I breathed her in, the bitter scent of old tombs, cut with the hot tang of blood.
The little one first, Gorgoth, she said,
without taking her eyes from mine. From the corner of my eye, I saw Gorgoth take Gog in the hugeness of his hand. The air became suddenly icy. The sound came of rock grinding on rock, setting my teeth on edge. The hall itself seemed to let forth a sigh of release, and with that exhalation, mists swirled up among us, wraiths finding momentary form in the pale coils. I felt my finger freeze in the muck within the skull that dangled in my grasp. The scraping ceased as bones found their partners. First one skeleton rose, in a complex ballet of inter-articulation, then the next. The mists bound each bone in a spectral mockery of flesh. I saw Gog explode into a fit of thrashing and writhing within Gorgoth's implacable grip. Little Magog stood his ground as the first skeleton advanced on him. Gog was too far gone in his rage to demand release. The roar that came from him sounded comical, so high-pitched and thick with fury. The necromancer slipped her arm around me. I can't tell you how it felt. We turned to watch Magog fight. The Lucrota child reached up to the skeleton's knee, no higher. He saw his moment, or rather, thought he did, and threw himself forward. You can't expect much from a 5-year-old. The undead caught him in bony fingers and threw him carelessly against a pillar. Magog hit hard, leaving it bloody. He didn't cry, though. He struggled to get up as the second skeleton stepped toward him. A flap of the child's pretty skin hung away from the red flesh of his shoulder. I looked away. Even with Chella's softness pressed to me, this sport tasted sour in ways I didn't understand. My eyes found Gog, still fighting in Gorgoth's fists. Gorgoth had both hands on the child now, though I doubted even I could fight out of his single grip. I hadn't imagined strength like that could lie in so small a thing. The skeleton had Magog in one hand, two bony fingers of the other hand ready to drive through his eyes. It seemed to me that a storm rose, though maybe it rose just in me, a storm lashing a moonless night and showing the world in lightning slices. A child's voice howled in my head and would not quiet, though I cursed it to silence. Every fiber of me strained to move, and no part of me so much as twitched. Hooks held me. There in the cradle of the necromancer's arms, I watched the skeletal fingers plunge toward the black pools of the Lucrota's eyes. When the hand exploded, I was as surprised as anyone. A big crossbow bolt will do that to a hand. The Nuban turned his face toward me, away from the sights of his bow. I saw the white crescent of his smile, and my limbs were free. I swung my arms up, sharp and hard. The skull in my hand hit the necromancer's face with the most satisfying crunch. Whoever made the Nuban must have fashioned him from bedrock. I never knew a man more solid. He held his words close. Few among the brothers sought his counsel. Men upon the road have little use for conscience. And although he never judged, the Nuban carried judgment with him. Chapter 30. I cleared scabbard and followed the arc of my family blade to face the necromancer. It's one of those swords they say can make the wind bleed. Appropriately, the edge found only empty air, which hissed as if cut. The necromancer fell back too swiftly for me to reach. The skull had taken her by surprise, but I didn't think I'd catch her again so easily. I guess the skull hit her in the bridge of the nose, because that's where the mess was. No blood, but a dark stain and a writhing of the flesh, as though 100 worms wriggled one over another. For the most part, the brothers still stood in the daze that had held me. The Nuban worked to load another bolt into his crossbow. Makin half drew his sword. Gorgoth let go of Gog. The necromancer took a breath, like a rasp drawn over ironwork, rattling in her throat.
That, she said, was a mistake.
So sorry. I kept my voice cheerful and lunged at her. She slipped around the pillar, leaving me to skewer the stonework. Gog hurled himself bodily at Magog and tore his little brother from the skeleton's one-handed grip. I caught a glimpse of pale finger marks on the child's neck. I moved around the pillar with a little caution, only to find the necromancer had somehow slipped back to a further pillar, 5 yards off.
I'm very particular about who I allow to place spells on me, I said, turning and aiming a swift kick at Rike. He's hard to miss. Come on, Rikey, up and at him!
Rike came to with a wordless howl of complaint, somewhere between disturbed walrus and bear prodded out of hibernation. Just in front of him, the two skeletons bent to reach for the Lucrota brothers, still a tangle of limbs on the dusty floor. Rike loomed over both of the undead and took a skull in each hand. He wrenched them together in a clap that reduced the pair to shards. Roaring unintelligibly, he shook his hands.
Cold!
He graduated to words.
Fucking freezing!
I turned to the necromancer, some witticism ready on my tongue. The taunt died where it sat. Her whole face writhed now. The flesh lay shrunken on her limbs, pulsing sporadically. The body that seduced my eyes now held all the allure of a famine corpse. She held me with a dark gaze, glittering in rotting slaughter. She laughed, and her laughter came as the sound of wet rags flapping at the wind. The brothers stood with me now. Gorgoth made no move, keeping his place. The little Lucrotas crouched together in the shadows.
We're many and you're one, my lady, and a damned ugly one at that. So you'd best step aside and let us past, I said.
Somehow I didn't think she was going to, but nothing ventured, nothing gained, as they say. That worm flesh of hers crawled into a smile so wide I could see her jawbones past the hinge point. For a second, her face rippled, and we saw Gaines there, screaming as he fell.
The dead are many, child, she said. I'll let you pass into their realm.
The temperature fell and kept falling, like there was no bottom for it to hit. It went from uncomfortable to painful to plain stupid in no time at all. And the noise, the awful grinding, as the skeletons built themselves from pieces and wrapped themselves in the spirit mist that rose around us. A sound to make you want to pull your teeth out. The torch in Makin's hand gave up its struggle against the cold and gutted out. The mist hid all but our nearest neighbours. The skeletons came at us slowly, as if in a dream. If not for the fire of Gorgoth's torch, we'd have been left in utter darkness. I swung my sword at the first attacker. The hilt felt frozen onto my hand, but I wasn't inclined to drop it in any case. I needed the exercise to keep warm. The skeleton disintegrated into a shower of brittle bone. I had no time to cheer before the next came lurching out of the fog. We fell to the fight, and time left us. We hung in a freezing limbo where only the shattering of bone and the rise and fall of swords held meaning. Every time I cut ghost flesh, it seemed that the cold bit a little deeper into me. The sword grew heavy in my hand until it felt as if they'd fashioned it from lead. I saw Rodat die. A skeleton caught him with his guard down. Bony fingers found either side of his head, and a whiteness spread from them. The living flesh dying where the ghost flesh touched. He was a weasel, was Rodat. But I took a pleasure in cutting in half the dead thing that killed him. Behind me someone screamed. Sounded like Brother Job. It wasn't the kind of scream you get up from. Makin found his way to my side, frost on his breastplate, blue in his lips.
They just keep coming!
I could hear a roaring behind us. The mist seemed to swallow sound, but the roaring ripped on through.
Rike!
I had to shout to be heard above it.
Gorgoth! You want to see him fight? He's a monster!
Makin shouted. I had to smile at that. They just kept coming. More and more, rank by rank, out of the dark. Somebody died beside me. I couldn't tell you who. We must have smashed 200 of the bastards, and still they kept coming. My sword got caught in the ribs of the skeleton I'd swung at. Not enough force in the blow. Makin shattered its neck with a flat swing.
Thanks.
The word came out blunt, through numb lips. I'm not going to die here. I kept running the thought through my head. It held less conviction each time. I'm not going to die here. I felt too cold to think. Not going to die here. Swing low to cut off those reaching hands. These bastards don't even feel it. The bitch felt it, though, when I broke her face. The bitch. When in doubt, let your hate lead you. Normally, I'd reject that advice. It makes a man predictable. But there, in that miserable hall of bones, I was past caring. Hate was all I had to keep me warm. I cut a skeleton down and lunged past. Jorg! I heard Makin's startled shout behind me. Then the darkness took my sight, and the mist threw a thick blanket over the crash of battle. Oh, it was black out there. So dark as to reach inside you and rip out all memory of colour. I swung my sword a few times, broke some bones, carved air for a while, then hit a pillar, which shook the damn thing out of my frozen grip. I hunted my sword frantically, with hands too numb to find my face. Gradually, it came to me that I was free of the skeletons. No bone fingers sought me in the night. Without sword or direction, I stumbled on. The bitch. She'd be somewhere near, surely, waiting to trap our souls as we died, waiting to feed. I stopped and stood as still as my shivering would let me. The necromancer had lifted the veil, just like the Nuban said. She had lifted the veil between the worlds, and the dead were coming through. If I stopped her, they'd stop coming. I listened deep, to a silence as velvet as the dark. I held more still, straining for her, tight and focused. Cloves. My lips formed the word. I wrinkled my nose. Oil of cloves? The scent drew me on. It hung fainter than faint, but, with nothing to fight against, it held me. I let it carry me forward, swaying, turning, seeking the source. My hands found a narrow doorway, and I stepped through into a chamber lit by the flickers of a dropped torch. I understood the scent. The Nuban's crossbow lay a foot from the torch, dropped carelessly. The cable drawn, but the bolt spilled to the stones. He'd broken from the brothers to hunt her, beaten me to the chase. Necromancer, I said. She stood at the mouth of one of the builder's shafts. The square maw filled the rear of the chamber behind her, and the feeble light could not plumb its depths. She held the Nuban before her, holding his head to one side and her mouth to the straining cables of his neck. I could see the tension in his thick arms, but his fingers curled useless by his sides, and his broadsword lay at his feet, hilt jutting into space over the edge of the shaft. The necromancer lifted her face from the Nuban's neck. Blood dripped from her teeth. Whatever strength she gleaned from it had restored her looks. The blood ran over full lips and down a perfect throat.
"You sent such a fresh one to hunt me down, Prince Jorg," she said.
Flavored with heathen spices. I thank you."
I knelt and picked up the Nuban's bow. The weight of it always surprised me. I set the bolt in place. She moved to use him as a shield, her heels to the pit.
"You're cold, my prince," she said.
The sudden music of her voice caught me off guard. It ran deep, rich with complexity.
"I could warm you."
My tired body thrilled with the dark melody of her. It took the memory of Gain's face crawling across her worm flesh to stop me rising to her call. I lifted the bow. I knew I couldn't hold it for long.
"It's grave cold that's in you."
Her voice became an angry hiss.
"It will kill you."
She smiled at me over the Nuban's shoulder, enjoying his helplessness.
"You're trembling, Jorg. Put the bow down. You probably couldn't even hit your friend here, let alone me."
It felt so tempting. Put the bow down. "He's not my friend," I said.
She shook her head.
He'd die for you. I can taste it in his blood.
You're playing the wrong game with me, dead thing. I raised the bow and sighted it. The tremor in my arms kept the aim point jumping. Any worse, and the bolt would have shaken from its groove. She laughed at me.
I can see the ties that bind the living. You only have two friends, Prince Jorg. You're as bound to this sweet-blooded man as any son to his father.
Sacrifice. She set her fingers to the red holes in the Nuban's neck.
Let me have the others. Let me take their life juice. And you and him, you can stay with me. You can help me harvest the Lucrota. There are several tribes, some of them quite fractious. There are other necromancers against whom a living ally, one as sharp as you, would be most useful.
Play the game. She smiled, and that dark fire lit in me again.
I like you, Prince. We can rule under the mountain. Together.
Sex dripped off her words. Not that pallid roll in the sheets that Sally surrendered, but something potent, unseen and consuming. She offered me a draw. Life, power and command. But in her service. Play to win. The Nuban's eyes were on mine. For the first time ever, I could read what he held there. I could have taken anything else. I could have taken hatred or fear or pleading. But he forgave me.
Joom!
The bolt hit the Nuban square in the chest. It put a hole through both of them and took them off the edge. Neither of them screamed, and it took forever before they hit the bottom. Most men have at least one redeeming feature. Finding one for Brother Reich requires a stretch. Is big a redeeming feature? Chapter 31. I came back to find the brothers nursing their wounds among drifts of broken bone. Rodat, Job, Els, and Frank lay stretched out, apart from the group. Death makes lepers of even the most popular men. I didn't bother with them. Any loot would be long gone.
Thought you'd left us, Brother Jorg.
Red Kent spared me a glance from beneath lowered brows and returned to the business of whetstone and sword. That brother held a note of reproach. A note at the least, perhaps a whole symphony. No prince for the runaway. Makin watched me with dark speculation, sprawled on the floor, too spent to prop himself against a pillar. Reich hefted himself to his feet. He came toward me slowly, polishing a ring against the leather padding of his breastplate. I recognized it as Rodat's luck ring, a nice piece of yellow gold.
Thought you'd left us, Brother Jorgi,
he said. He loomed over me, a broad and brooding form. There's some, like Lyre, that aren't much to look at. And it's a surprise for folks when they find out what a truly nasty bastard they're dealing with. Reich never surprised anyone that way. The menace of him, the sheer brutality, his love of other people's pain, well, Mother Nature wrote it in every line of him, just to warn us. The Nuban is dead. I ignored Reich and looked to Makin. I pulled the Nuban's crossbow off my back and showed it. No doubt after that, the man was dead.
Good, said Reich. Serves him right for running. Never did like that weasel coward.
I hit Reich as hard as I could, in the throat. I made no conscious decision. If I'd given it the smallest moment's consideration, I'd have held my blow. I might have stood a chance against him with a sword, but never with bare hands. Actually, bare hands is going too far. I had my gauntlets on, riveted iron. I stood 6 foot tall at 14, lean, but hard with muscle from swinging a sword and carting my armor.